J1.
Number 2A.
Okay, now, I'd like to just simply go over these seven synonymous terms. And again, just enjoy the fact that this first category, therefore, is one which is very, very important because it states those seven basic elements of being. Now, where do we get these seven basic elements? And as the old hands here know, that Mary Baker Eddy states those seven basic elements of being in her definition for God. And that is found on page 465 of Science and Health. And in answer to that question, what is God? She says that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And so in these seven capitalized terms, she presents the sevenfold nature of God. Now, actually, in that definition, it's those seven capitalized terms that are important, because as we saw that the divine system of reference is based on the capitalized terms as found in Science and Health. But later on, we'll see that actually she already, in that definition, gives the fourfold operation of being, because there we also have incorporeal, word, divine, Christ, supreme, Christianity, and infinite science. But to get right now the basic capitalized terms which belong to the divine system of reference, in that definition we therefore see the sevenfold nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now it's those seven capitalized terms, therefore, that are important. And the question then again is asked in Science and Health, and this is a very basic fundamental question that each one of us should know, even as old hands in Christian Science, when people ask us this question, because the church is still pushing this, some of these points home. And we must know that answer to the question which states, are these terms synonymous? And she and Mrs. Eddy answers that question on page 465 and says, they are. They refer to the one absolute God. They are also intended to express the nature, essence, and wholeness of deity. The attributes of God are justice, mercy, wisdom, goodness, and so on. So in answer to that question, are these terms synonymous? She says they are. Now, often the general feeling of synonymous, as we know, may be that they feel that a synonymous term is an identical term, therefore it's freely interchangeable. But we know that this is not correct, that synonymous terms are not freely interchangeable. And I must read again that old traditional statement, actually, from the Funk and Wagnall Dictionary on synonymous. He says, by synonymous words, we usually understand words that coincide or nearly coincide in some part of their meaning and may hence, within certain limits, be used interchangeably, while outside of these limits, they may differ very greatly in meaning and use. Therefore, in synonymous, in the meaning of the word synonymous, we see that they are words which within certain limits can be used interchangeably, while outside of these limits, they may differ very greatly in meaning and use. A John H. Finley, who was once Commissioner of Education for the State of New York, I guess it was some 30 years ago now, wrote in an introduction to Crabbe's English Synonyms, he wrote in there, and I'd like to just quote him, he says, if synonyms were words which had always exactly the same meaning, there would be no need for such a book. It is the differences between words that are of similar import that gave Crabbe his meticulous labor and a life beyond his years. If synonyms were equinyms, that is, words of equal meaning, the English vocabulary might be shortened by hundreds or thousands of words. Therefore, we can ask of a synonymous term, within what limits are they interchangeable? And within what limits do they differ greatly? Mrs. Eddy herself answers these two questions. In answer to the questions, are these terms synonymous? She states they are. And then she says they refer to one absolute God. Now, it is here where the limit is to which these seven terms are interchangeable. Because they refer to the one God, we can very freely say God is mind, God is spirit, God is soul, God is principle, God is life, God is truth, and God is love. Therefore, they're interchangeable when they're referring to God. But now we ask the next question. Within what limits do they differ greatly in meaning and use? Mrs. Eddy answers it, and she says that they also intend to express the nature, essence, and wholeness of deity. So here is a limit in which they differ. They differ greatly when they're used to express the nature, essence, and wholeness of deity. Therefore, we can see that each of these terms are individually intended to express a certain aspect of the sevenfold nature of God. Each term is intended to express a unique aspect of God in a sevenfold way, you see. This question is always asked, why do you need seven synonymous terms for God? You can see that the Western religious world would ask, why should there be seven synonymous terms for God? What's wrong with just saying God? Or you can see that the Eastern world would very well say to us, why bother with seven synonymous terms for the infinite one? Just say the infinite one, or the one being, or say the absolute. Why seven terms? Why? Now, what we begin to see is that we cannot define God, or we cannot define the infinite one with one word or as one great big whole. Why? What's wrong with just saying, God, or just saying, man, there's just the infinite one, and go off and meditate on the fact that there's just the infinite one? Well, what we see is when we sit there meditating and thinking, man, there is just the infinite one, something creeps in and says, all right, yeah, good, but what is this infinite one? And here the danger comes in. The danger comes in is that we personally give our personal belief of what that infinite one is. Or if we say, what is God? Well, then we have that God very much subject to our own personal interpretation of what that God is. Therefore, what we actually need is a definition, an answer to what is God, which is a totally objective answer. It's a totally divinely objective answer, which is free of any subjective opinion, you see, and free of any personal viewpoint. So, again, we can say, why seven synonymous terms? You see, because most religions just define God, they just say, just believe in the one God, you see, there runs into this danger. Because we know only too well by experience that many of friends that we have who are Christians, they just don't have the same definition of God. But I feel that if one would ask different Christians what is God, you'll find out that they usually do not give the same answer, or sometimes they just can't answer it and just look blank. And one may say, well, God is the Father. And you say to him, fine, what is the Father? And then they'll say, well, God is the Creator. And you say, fine, but what is the Creator? You see, it's always the what is comes in. And then they'll just say, oh, well, God is unknown. Well, then that just leaves us there, and it's with life. And so we begin to see, therefore, that each Christian has his own belief of what God is, and there isn't actually a common principle. But how about the Eastern world or the Eastern philosophy? And many of us here know people who are studying Eastern philosophy. And you ask them, okay, what is the infinite one? And they'll say, oh, well, that's easy. The infinite one is the what is. And you say to them, oh, good. Well, what is the what is? You see, you want to know, well, what is that what is? Or another person will say the infinite one is a state of awareness. Or another one will say the infinite one is ultimate reality. But you always want to say what is ultimate reality. Therefore, you see that it becomes hard to just state this term because we want to say what is. And another example we could use is theology. We could ask a theologian what is God, and the theologian may just substitute the word God with another term and say, well, God is the Lord. And then you say, well, that's fine again. You say, that's good. I'm glad that it's the Lord, but what is the Lord? And then we can ask a bunch of scientists today, what is the principle of being? And again, because in the various sciences, you'll see that there's so many world sciences from all the scientists, you'll get all different definitions of what the principle of being is. So today there is a need to take that whole term God and to define it and analyze it. And we want to define it and analyze it so we get a common definition of what God is, what the infinite one is, or what the principle of being is. We want a common definition which is totally and divinely, therefore, objective and free of any personal interpretation. And we need a common definition which is going to satisfy the Western world. It's going to have to satisfy the Eastern world. It's going to have to satisfy, therefore, all philosophies and religions and science. We need a world formula, so to speak. Now, we see about the Christians for a minute, the Western world and the Christians. We can say to the Christians that there really isn't any reason why they don't have a common definition for God, because the Bible does define God very, very clearly and gives an actual common definition as to what God is, and it gives this definition totally divinely objective, and it gives it totally free of any human beliefs or personal beliefs. But you know, the religious world actually hasn't seen this common definition, therefore it doesn't know it. So, what is the common definition that the Bible gives? And we can just see how the Bible analyzes. What we want to do is to see this, the scientific analysis in the Bible, and asking and answering this question, what is God? Now, very briefly, in answer to the question, what is God, let us turn to the Bible. And on Genesis 1:1, we see it says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now that's beautiful. There is a whole statement of being. There is a whole statement of God. God in his wholeness. God created heaven and the earth. There is the wholeness. But what comes in when we sit and contemplate that beautiful whole statement, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, all of a sudden we sit there, what's God? We say. And we say, what is God? And then we say, well, what is the heaven? And then we'll say, well, what is earth? Our questions keep always coming in. So therefore, the biblical writers must have known the inquiring mind, and that such a statement wouldn't hold up, and that one would have to go in and define this big whole. And they knew that we had it, that there had to be definition, which is divinely objective fact. So these biblical writers went on, and they brought forth the first record of creation. And it's beautiful how they actually detail and analyze what is God. They show what God is in a very detailed and analyzed way. And they analyze God, therefore, through his sevenfold nature, or in his seven main offices. Therefore, as many of us know, each day of creation depicts a certain aspect of God's sevenfold nature. And also we know that these 7 days of creation follow a definite order of unfoldment. Now, briefly, the first day has a tone of creative intelligence. The second day has a tone of separation or ordered birth. The third day has a tone of identity. The fourth day has a tone of systematic government. The fifth day has a tone of abundant life. The sixth day has a tone of dominion, and the seventh day has a tone of rest and fulfillment. Now, every Christian should be able to define God because of that beautiful, detailed analysis. They could define God in a sevenfold way. You can come up to a Christian and say, what is God? And they could say, God is the creative intelligence which orders, identifies, and governs all individualities. And he gives to each individuality dominion and fulfillment. here in that beautiful detailed analysis of those 7 days of creation, we all of a sudden get the seven main offices of God and what God is. It begins to say what God is. Now, this is the exact method of scientific analysis that Mrs. Eddy used in answering the question, what is God? She uses the scientific method of analysis. Now, please turn to your illustrative material and on the page there where the first page of the prism. There are other pages of the prism illustrative material, but just look at the first page and we'll be there for a while and I'll mention to go on later. Now, Mrs. Eddy therefore uses the same scientific method of analysis as the biblical writers used, and it can be shown in the simple example in science of the prism. Now, as we all know, many of us have been through this example before, but it's oftentimes so beautiful just to see it again because it's so simple and really wonderful. We know that in being and in reality in our everyday life, there's just the white light. And as an example in science, just first here, we know that white light, when it passes through a prism, comes out in seven hues. And those seven hues always come out in the same fundamental order. And they come out in the order of red-violet, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and blue-violet. Now, this is beautiful, those seven hues, and you know, not many of the basic color theories know this. You find many of our basic color theories in art are just based on six colors or five colors. But there's one source that we can go to see the seven hues of the rainbow, and that's Paul Klee's book, The Thinking Eye. And in here, he just has a beautiful discussion on the seven hues of the rainbow. And then he shows how those seven hues of the rainbow go into a circle. But he is the one that I'm aware of that points out the split in the rainbow into seven hues, into seven basic colors. And we know, too, as a scientific fact, that when those seven basic colors are taken together, they're still the same white light. So we can say, therefore, that white light is all of those colors. Now, Mrs. Eddy's scientific method of analysis. Mrs. Eddy states that the one God is seven-hued white. And she states this in this way. She says, thus olden face pale star now blends in seven hued white. And she states this in verse 10 of Christ in Christmas. Again, thus olden face pale star now blends in seven hued white. Thus olden's face pale star. Olden face. What does she mean by olden face? Thus olden face. And thus olden face actually means the old, if you can say it, the old biblical faith, or the biblical faith that there is just one God. That is the biblical faith, the olden faith, that there is just one God. But she said this now blends in seven-hued white. We begin to see that this one God, which the Bible talks about, the monotheistic concept that there is only one God, now blends in seven-hued white. It's now shown in its sevenfold nature. This is what the Bible shows, and this is what Mrs. Eddy shows in her definition. Now, on that page you have there, you'll see Mrs. Eddy's scientific method of analysis. She states, science is the prism of truth which divides its rays and brings out the hues of deity. Now, Mrs. Eddy therefore takes God. What is God? That big, indefinable term, you just can't define it as a whole. If you do, the danger comes in of personal opinions. Now, how can she take this beautiful term God and give us a common definition, which is a divinely objective definition? She takes that term and says that science is the prism. She takes the one God, passes it through the prism of science, and shows that it brings out the hues of deity. So that one God, she passes through a prism and divides that one being into a seven-hued white. She divides that one being into a sevenfold nature. Those hues of God, those seven hues white, then, is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's her scientific method of analysis, of taking the one being through a prism and divides it into its sevenfold nature. And we begin to see, and we know that this, when that one being goes through the prism and is divided into its sevenfold nature, that it always follows the same fundamental order, the word order, the order of unfoldment from mind to spirit to soul to principle to life to truth and to love. So here we have, therefore, the one being divided through science into a sevenfold nature. Now this already gives us something more definable. So when we go into our quiet study and we say, what is God? We all of a sudden say, oh, gee, now instead of that term God, I say that reality consists of seven basic elements. Reality consists of mind, it consists of spirit, it consists of soul, it consists of principle, it consists of life, it consists of truth, and it consists of love. That's fine, but all of a sudden we'll say, what is mind? We don't stop there. We still want to know more. We want to go on and we say, what is mind? There's the inquiring mind again, the what is, the what is, the what is. So just as in physical science, where the one light passes through the prism and you get the seven hues, those seven hues, in order to distinguish themselves from each other, are divided into various shades. And we know then we have all the various shades of yellow, the shades of green. This is true in divine science. The one God, as it passes through the prism into its sevenfold nature, is also therefore seen. One will say then, what is mind? Therefore we ask after the various shades of mind. We ask after the various ideas of mind. What are the ideas that characterize mind? And through our study of science and health, we begin to see that there are very distinct ideas that characterize each of these basic synonymous terms. And the shades of mind, therefore, are the various ideas such as intelligence or cause or basis or power that begins to get a feeling of mind. Intelligence, cause, basis, power, or the various shades of spirit would be the ideas of substance, of order, of purity. And the various shades of soul would be like identity, changelessness. As we go on, we can go with the rest of the synonymous terms and ask what are their ideas, and this is what our study will be in the next few weeks, to really feel we know what each of these synonymous terms are. So we see that there are therefore our ideas that characterize each of these synonymous terms, which therefore distinguish each of these terms from one another. Now, you could turn just to that next illustration on the prism, and you begin to see that Mrs. Eddy goes on with her scientific method of analysis, and you begin to see that she says, the lens of science magnifies the divine power to human sight, and then we see the allness of spirit. And we then see the allness of spirit. And she goes on to say, the rays of infinite truth, when gathered into the focus of ideas, bring light instantaneously, whereas a thousand years of human doctrines, hypotheses, and vague conjectures emit no such effulgence. Now, the rays of infinite truth, the rays, the seven elements of being, are gathered into the focus of ideas. These seven elements of being are now gathered together into the focus of ideas, and it's science, the lens, that is doing the focusing. Therefore, in a scientific way, these ideas are gathered together. And at this focal point is where we see the focus of ideas. So we can say to ourselves, what is focusing? What happens at that focus point when those rays are gathered together at a focal point? And you know, that's a very hot little point there. All this is coming in and it's focusing in, right? Kind of like you take a magnet and the sun shines through and it just pinpoints a very hot little point. At that point of focusing, we begin to see that those seven elements of being are now blending together. And when they blend together, they blend together according to the layout of the 7x7. Now just turn your illustrated material, therefore, to the elements matrix chart, and you'll see the layout of a 7x7 layout in a matrix, elements matrix chart. Now, that layout of the 7x7 actually is the full focusing of those seven elements together. And by seeing those elements focusing together, this brings out a full understanding, and it brings out understanding instantaneously. Now, it's interesting to see here that this is something which is a focusing of ideas is something which actually happens in arithmetic. You see, when a child first has to learn the order of the 10 digits, and after he learns those 10 digits, he begins to compute numbers and brings them into definite relationships. So as we have seen the divine order and the definite order of the seven elements of being, and after we've seen their distinct ideas, we begin to see that each idea always reflects every other idea, and each divine ideas in an infinite way. And Mrs. Eddy therefore calls this infinite computation, the infinite calculus, a spirit. So therefore we must know that there is no such thing as an idea standing by itself. An idea can only be really understood in its sevenfold reflection. So, in my book that I have out called The Imperative Step, I've taken up this question, and in there I took up this question of blending of ideas, and I think I'll use the example from that book and show just to get into the blending of ideas. This is a study which in itself, as you can see through the chart, is infinite, and perhaps we'll get together and in workshop sessions as we go on in these classes, and we can talk to each other about blending of ideas. But first we must be sure we know what the ideas are and the structure of ideas, and then we can get into blending them. But in my book, just to point out an example of the blending of ideas, I mentioned that today in the world the scientists are talking about that we live in an intelligent universe. And I have quoted in there an article that comes from a London newspaper about a universe that thinks. So the scientists are beginning to say we live in an intelligent universe per se, that it's just an information universe. Now, through our study, we begin to see that information is a characteristic of mind. We begin to see that mind is the creative intelligence which produces information. Therefore, information itself is an idea of mind, you see.